Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome back to Tech Magic for episode 2. I am your host, Kathy Hackle. I am a tech and gaming executive at a company called Journey. I'm also a tech futurist, and I'm always traveling the globe doing something fun. Today, I'm joined by my co-host, my guest co-host, Lee Keebler. Lee, how are you?
I'm great. Yeah, we had a great week last week, and I'm just glad to be back again. I think this will be a lot of fun. So you're on my coast right now. I mean, I'm not in California. I'm in Oregon. But what are you doing on the West Coast over here? You're normally the East Coast girl, right?
I am. I'm New York, DC, like always East Coast, but I've been coming to the West Coast quite often. I'm actually in Laguna Beach right now at the Montage Hotel, which is stunning. And I'm actually here for the Wall Street Journal Tech Live conference. Yeah, it's been just super fun. We had Roblox's CEO David Baszucki on stage, then Palmer Luckey. We can talk about some of that later tonight after you and I finish recording, because we're recording on Monday. There's going to be John Legend and Arnold Schwarzenegger. So it's crazy. There's like Sam Altman tomorrow. I mean, yeah, this is one of those conferences where it is like this amazing group of people together. So yeah, I'm thrilled to be here. I will say I'm a little jet lagged. I'm a little tired because I spent the weekend at an amazing resort called the Salamander Resort in the DC area. It is owned by Sheila Johnson. So if people don't know who she is, but she's, you know, anyone that's listening might not know who she is, but most people might. She is America's first Black woman billionaire, one of the founders of BET, and now she runs the biggest Black-owned hospitality luxury resorts. I was there. I love the Salamander Resorts. Highly recommend. And I was there actually for a fashion show, because you know fashion's my thing, Lee.
It has to be, because it's not my thing. Like, I'm so out of that.
You're very stylish, though, sometimes.
I wear the nicest hoodies. Yeah, that's...
There you go. Well, I heard you were picking up your glasses today. So, and I can't see you because we're not doing video. But I hope that they're like, you know, you're making a statement with your glasses or something.
It's the typical, like, developer clear rim thick glasses. Like, there's nothing... at all. I will say this, though. This has nothing to do with fashion. It has to do with glasses. But I placed an order for those corrective lenses for the Quest 3. So when those get in, I'm super excited to see what high-definition VR actually looks like.
Well, I think everyone's unboxing. I see all the videos of people unboxing their Meta Quest 3s. Like, mine's still in the box because I just haven't been home. But
it's
I can't
amazing.
Wait to get my hands on it. Yeah.
You've been playing with it. So. Yeah, I've been playing with it. And I'll tell you, it's there's a pack-in game for it that kind of explains Meta's vision of augmented reality in gaming. And I've been on the fence about how like AR and gaming was going to play out. I played this game and I was just like, it's so dang fun that I get it. I totally get what they're going to go for now. It's a blast.
Well, we're going to be talking about wearables for sure during this episode. But anyway, I do want to give a shout out to my friend Anifa, who is an amazing designer. She actually went viral during the pandemic. I'm not sure if you remember this. There was a fashion show during the pandemic that just had the 3D models of the designs walking down the runway. That was her.
Oh, yeah.
Her fashion line is called Hanifa. Brilliant, brilliant Black designer. And she just launched a bridal line, and I don't know. It was amazing. I was invited to be front row, which is so exciting. A lot of like amazing A-listers were there for the launch of her bridal line, which has nothing to do with tech, but you know, tech is my passion. And Anifa does have that, you know, technology kind of roots. I will make a comment, and I think this is interesting. She finished the fashion show coming out on the runway, carrying her little baby, and literally she was crying. The baby was crying. We were all crying. It was just a lovely moment of, I think, you know, for a lot of us women in creative industries, women in tech, it was just a beautiful moment of, wow, you know, you can accomplish so much. We can't have it all necessarily all the time. But yeah, it was a lovely, lovely moment. So big shout out to Anifa and her creative genius. But anyway, let's get into the show. I want to start talking about something that I've seen kind of go viral. I've seen it everywhere from Adobe Max. So Adobe hosts a creative conference called Adobe Max every year. It's actually my favorite Adobe conference. It's just tons of creatives coming together, usually in LA, and they have all the announcements. They also have something called the Adobe Sneaks. And this is where they kind of pull in different teams that have been working on, you know, R&D projects. And they introduce something called Project Primrose, which it was a beautiful, beautiful use of technology on fabric and dresses. But I don't know. Do you want to fill people in a little bit on kind of what they launched, Lee? I'm going to let you talk about dresses now.
No, I have so many fashion questions after seeing this video because it is like all over LinkedIn. It's all over social media. It seems to be some type of low voltage charged material. It's not even a material. It's like a flat, bendable, flexible polymer of some sort that allows things to be either reflective or kind of like, you know, that security glass that you see in really fancy offices where they can make it just snap to frosted. It's something along the lines of that. Everything I've read didn't go into deep detail on how or what it was, but they basically made these made this dress out of these pieces that were checkered throughout, and they were layered like scales. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because you could do patterns and movement across the dress.
Yeah, it was really interesting to watch the reaction. You know, usually at Adobe Sneaks, when they introduce some of these projects, some of them get oohs and ahs. But this was amazing to me. I wasn't there in person, but hearing everyone like oohing and ahing, it was like it made kind of an impact. And she was moving, like the person that was Christine, who was presenting the dress, she's the one that worked on it. With a team, you know, she would move and it would change. And, you know, just imagine the creative opportunities that something like this brings to fashion, right? I do want to caveat this with Lee. Oh, yeah, you saw it. Go ahead.
No, I didn't see it in person, but I saw it used in a different way that I thought made actually more sense. It was woven into a purse, a bag, a handbag. Mm-hmm. And that looked really cool. Like I could see that one made sense. The dress, I don't know if the dress worked for me.
Visually, I think the dress was like making the statement. I think people could relate to the dress more than the purse. So maybe on stage, it made sense, right?
I'm a functional guy. I'm like, sit down. I dare you.
Yeah, that dress is not made for, that dress is not made for the runway in that sense. But you know, I thought it was beautiful. I do want to caveat this with people understanding something with Adobe Sneaks. Usually it's projects that are in R&D. It doesn't mean everything makes it as a product. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? So like this mic, because it got so many oohs and ahs, but we'll see.
I feel like I remember seeing something very similar to this a couple of years ago. It was not as detailed. It was like they were longer bands and it was more of an e-ink thing that was woven into a dress. I don't know if that was Adobe or not. I'm just thinking of it off the top of my head. And so it's interesting to kind of see these iterations where people are trying to figure out how to do something more creative along this lines. I do wonder of like, how does it, once that gets worked into clothing and wearables, how that content gets updated. Is it wireless? Are you subjected to be hacked? And then all of a sudden you have like crazy messages scrawling across your body. Like all of those things is where my brain goes. Yeah.
That could get pretty crazy pretty quickly. Imagine things people could display on your dress. Yeah. I, you know, what if your dress gets hacked and, you know, something inappropriate, or who knows? Like, I don't know if we want to go down that rabbit hole, but, I will say it's not the first time that like fashion has done something like this. I think the key component here was that it was responding to her, but also that it works with generative AI. So like they mm-hmm. talked about how it could work with Adobe Firefly, which I was an alpha user, and you know, kind of, I love that part because it's starting to, you know, to integrate that. And we are going to be talking about AI wearables, but more so wearables that you might wear on your face or maybe on your clothing. So not your clothing being the wearable, but I do love the direction it's going into. I wonder if we're going to see some of it next February during Fashion Month. We'll have to see what happens. You got a lot of oohs and ahs, and we'll see. I do have to say something. Jasna Rock, who is a Belgian creative technologist, she's been doing things with fabric that's similar, that responds to people's emotions. So I do want to give a shout out to her because she's one of those people that has been doing, you know, things with this not with this specific technology, but along those types of things where, you know, the fabric responds to someone's movement and everything. So yeah, I can't wait to see you in a primrose shirt.
You know, if they do a jacket, I could do that. Like if like a big jacket that you can do something on the back, I'm down for that. I did notice that as soon as these, you know, reposts on LinkedIn started happening of this content, there were immediately marketing people chiming in of like, oh, you could put brands and you could turn that into a billboard. I'm just, oh my gosh, this is going to be a whole weird new future of it. I was like, if you do that, you're basically recreating the sandwich board signs from, you know, back in the day. Where, so, I don't know if we need to go that far.
Yeah. I was thinking more of like creative, what you could do with it, not so much like what brands can put on it, right?
That's exactly where LinkedIn goes, though, every time.
Yeah. There's some, I mean, I love LinkedIn, but there are some times where it's just like, okay. Oh, my goodness. Well, talking about a lot of different things, I sent you an article from The Guardian over the weekend, and it was about the state of gaming. It talked about how, you know, gaming is doing great in some ways, but not so much for the people creating the games. And it was talking about how long it takes to create a AAA game. Like, you and I are part of this industry, so we know that it takes a long time, but I don't think that most people don't really understand that it can take, you know, even up to 5 to 6 years to create one of these games and then launch it. But what are your thoughts? I mean, because obviously we're friends with a lot of gamers. It's a really, you know, it's an exciting time in gaming, but it's also a stressful time in gaming with all the layoffs and, you know, people not getting recruited as fast. So what are your thoughts? Because I sent you that article and I know it was impactful.
I read through it and to back up a little bit, my weekend was actually spent at a conference that was completely different from yours and not nearly as star-studded. But I was at the Portland Retro Gaming Expo. I'm a big video game collector, and it was all about like old video games. And I sat through a couple of talks with some of the like original developers from Atari and things like that. And they were talking about how long it would take them to make a game. And back then, you know, it would take them 5 months to 8 months. And they were, from beginning to end, the game. They did the artwork. It was just one developer. They developed the game. They developed the artwork. They would do all of that, you know, in one sitting. And when the game was done, it had one author. We're obviously not there. We've come so far. And now you've got these massive teams, and it's like taking on putting together a movie or a Netflix miniseries. You know, it takes hundreds of thousands of people sometimes, even when you start getting into some of these like larger titles where they've got to go global. But the indie game development world has also taken a big bite out of how the massive players, the big publishers had once had a stranglehold. Indie developers have released some of the biggest and better games out there. So we kind of see this way direction of it being pulled back in the other way. And we're finding a nice balance, but that has caused a lot of, like you said, the layoffs have been pretty rough this year. Yeah. And it takes a long time to make these games. And quite frankly, from my personal opinion, a lot of these games, what's being invested to them, don't have are not even necessary, right? We're starting to get into this realm of like, how long can a game be, right? Okay, you pay $60, $70 for a brand new video game. And there are people who don't want that game to end, or they want it to be like 80 hours. That's tough, right?
That's a lot of work for those developers.
But if you think about it, let's look at it from an economic standpoint. If you sell a video game to somebody and it's a massively long game and they envelop their life into that game, what other games are they not buying?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're spending all of their time going back to that game for the course of years, right? And so I think that there does need to be a balance. There's a criticism of the latest title for Assassin's Creed, which is this massive, popular, very longstanding brand. And they actually have a VR game coming out later this year too, which I'm excited to see. But the criticism is that the game's only 12 hours long. And I'm like, well, that's great. That means all of the boring crap in that game doesn't have to exist, right? There's always those tedious moments in these longer games where you're just like, oh my gosh, get through it. So I don't know. I think maybe it'll cull out a little bit if we can start seeing these games go into shorter, not only shorter playtimes, but smaller groups of people developing it. It shouldn't take an army to build some of these things. But in that, we are seeing those layoffs come through and budgets are changing. And obviously, I've got a lot of friends in this industry myself, that's hard to see.
And my worry is, Lee, that with generative AI, like some of these things are going to get, some of these development cycles might get shortened or teams might get smaller, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But then you've got a lot of great developers that might be left out of a job, like maybe not immediately. But I do worry of that, because when you think about the state of gaming, like gaming is an industry. And I think most people listening to this understand that it's a massive industry, right? It's bigger than, what is it, Hollywood and music combined. So the state of gaming is something that you and I are going to come back to this on a constant basis, especially, for anyone in the brand and marketing side to learn a little bit more about that, because it's such a massive industry. And the state of gaming is interesting right now.
So much of the trade itself is transferable skills, right? I'm not too worried about that. I think that maybe we do get to a place where not everyone works in gaming, or maybe we get to a place where, okay, you were let go of one project and now you can focus on that project that you've had in your folder for, the last 3 years that never got released. And that ends up being a massive hit, because we are in a place where an indie developer by themselves even can still have a massive hit. Stardew Valley is a fantastic example of a single person going out, starting a game, and then like making a massive hit. I think Super Meat Boy was another one. Those were two people that went out and made a massive hit. So it is interesting to see the kind of the white knuckle clinch of the industry taking a bit of a turn. But my hope is, if people are able to see the positive light in it and see the opportunity in it, that they'll take it and we'll get even better content.
Yeah. And another thing is, like, when these cycles take so long, right, to create a game, it's like one of them is like it took 6 years, right? Not all of them, but some of them take a very long time. With culture, I feel like culture now, especially with Gen Z and some Gen Alpha, like it happens so fast. Like it happens on TikTok, and like what's trendy today might not be trendy over the weekend. So that worries me, right? When you're creating these games and taking so long, like, when it comes to marketing them, when it comes to bringing them to market, like I know gamers like certain things. There's a quality to the NPCs and there's certain game mechanics and stuff. But my worry is that because the cycles are so quick with culture and what's trendy, that, there it might take 5 years to create a game. And then when you launch it, it doesn't go well.
Well, I would argue that if your game goes out of style in 5 years, you never had a good game. You just had a trend.
Valid point.
Because good games, really good games, stick around. I mean, Tetris is a great example of a really good game. Tetris has been around since the early 80s, and we, in what, 2021, I think we got Tetris Effect. Equally amazing game. And you know what? A couple years from now, there'll be another Tetris branded game. Because the core to what that game mechanic is brilliant. One of the things that I do see popping up, and I've seen it in a couple of articles, is we don't need any more first person multiplayer shooter games. Like, they're all the same. Mm-hmm. And if that's what you're out building, you better have a real good change in the creativity or the mechanic or something unique to it. Because if it's not unique, it's getting tired. And hey, maybe that's probably a good thing. This is what Nintendo does so well, is they find formulas that work very well and they keep them fresh. And we're going to see it at the end of this month when the new Mario game comes out, because it's a 2D platformer, just like the original Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
But it's completely fresh. I'm going to buy it. Everyone else who's a Nintendo or Mario fan is going to buy it.
Everyone's going to buy it.
and so when I hear people say, oh, you know, five years from now, this game might not be a hit. I don't think you had a hit, buddy. You had a trend. Those are two different things.
Yeah. And I think the magic there, what you're mentioning, like with Mario, is, you know, the IP, people recognize it. There's nostalgia, but like my kids love it too. And like Mario, like they want to go to amusement parks. They want to engage with the IP in so many different ways. Right. So it is about the gameplay, but it's also the IP, right? So
can we just take a moment and realize how absolutely ridiculous it is that how popular Mario is when it's basically a stereotyped Italian plumber who was created in Japan? Yeah. Like, what a wild world we live in. If you would have told someone back in like the mid 70s that one of the biggest brand IPs that would like squash Mickey Mouse was an Italian plumber. I just don't think it would have made sense.
It sounds like an episode of like an unmade Back to the Future movie. It
just something weird, yeah. Right? Like that just
it's like what Mickey happened? Mouse?
It works
Italian
though.
Plumber? Yeah, it works. I mean, I love it. You know, let's go. talking about gaming, we heard the news that Arm & Hammer has entered the gaming space, and you have some interesting comments about it. I have not visited kind of what they're doing right now, so I'm going to kind of rely on you to kind of give your opinion on this one.
I want your take on this though, because I don't have any kids that play video games, and mm-hmm. you have a couple kids who've played Roblox, right? So last week we talked about how weird it was that Shell was getting into the Shell Gas. Was getting into Fortnite to make a Fortnite creative world. And that seemed a little weird. And so I think I had a couple of people send me this link about Arm & Hammer is now in Livetopia on Roblox, which for those who don't know, Livetopia is actually one world that does bring brands in and lets them like experiment and play inside of Roblox without it being like their own official world. And I had some people send that link to me thinking that I was going to be on the same bandwagon, and I'm totally not. I love this. I think it's fantastic.
So we're getting goodly. We're getting nicely.
You're getting super supportively because it was so well thought out. Like, and it goes back to the like early moments in my children are early exposed to Arm & Hammer baking soda of all things, because we all did like science experiments with it, right?
So true. Yeah, my kids actually, it's a good point. We always have Arm & Hammer baking soda because you never know when they're going to need it for anything.
Mix that mm-hmm. with vinegar and you have a volcano and you learn about science, and it's just been like decades of that science experiment done over and over again at like age 6 or 7. And that's what they're doing in Livetopia, right? Like that's what they're doing in Roblox, is they're talking about the science behind what Arm & Hammer baking soda does. And they have that experiment to kind of show what baking soda and vinegar would do. And it leads the kid to like actually want to go do that experiment if they hadn't, you know, thought of it before. So it's just another outlet for kids to learn about science. And yes, it's branded, but in this particular case, I was like thinking about it. I'm like, well, who else would be better to talk about this type of like science than Arm & Hammer? I'm totally on board. I think it's a good use case.
I love it. And actually, like now that you mentioned that, like I could see like a kid that might have not done the experiment. My kids who have done it, like they're probably be like, hey, mom, can we do it again?
Yeah.
Right. So obviously win-win, like that's a fantastic example.
I'm a big proponent for STEM education. And I know this doesn't literally like completely fall in STEM education, but it sure is a gateway to it in a way. I think it's cute. It's adorable. It's in a good location. I think Roblox is the right spot to get the conversation started. So it gets a thumbs up for me.
Fantastic. I do want to mention very briefly that the news last week about Microsoft completing the acquisition of Activision Blizzard, huge news in the gaming space as well. I think, you know, a lot of people were holding their breaths earlier in the year when things were not looking that great for that, you know, that acquisition, but it went through. So quick thoughts on that.
I mean, it makes them the third largest video game company in the world. Mm-hmm. It was a $69 billion acquisition. I think it's good for them. We'll see what they do. I mean, that's always the hardest thing, right? You when you buy something like that. I'm a longtime Activision fan from they were the first third party video game publisher. I don't think most people know that. Like they were a handful of developers that were part of Atari, and they got mad for not getting their credit at Atari. And so they up and quit and they went and started Activision, and then they made the best Atari games on the planet, and then they never stopped. So they're kind of the originals of the third party publisher. And I think a lot of video game success as an art and medium is owed to them. But whenever these transitions happen, you just have to kind of wait and see. And that's where I'm at.
Well, I do think it's like it shows how big business, like gaming is big business. Like,
oh, totally.
Yeah, massive business. Like there was an interesting article, maybe we can include it in the show notes about, you know, is Disney becoming a gaming company? We can definitely go down that route next time. But I think for now, I do want to mention something related to Activision Blizzard. They put out some reports, some data on gamer moms, which I am one of those gamer moms. And it talked about gamer moms being a fantastic audience and how a big percentage of moms are gamers, especially, you know, millennial moms that are Gen Alpha moms like myself. Really interesting data there that I think for anyone in brand or marketing or anyone really that's interested in technology, a really interesting read on the data that they have. So,
The thing, the stereotypical gamer is done, right? Like it's everybody, right? And this acquisition will prove to grow. I had to quickly look this up because I was curious when you were talking about the impact of like, oh, it's its own medium. To put it in perspective, this was a $69 billion deal. Disney acquired Lucasfilms for Star Wars for $4 billion. So, I mean, like it dwarfs most media acquisitions when it comes to stuff like that.
Massive difference. Oh my goodness. So, well, on that note, we're going to go to break and then we're going to come back and talk about some things that we talked about related to voice AI prints and using voice in AI and some latest news. Then we'll talk about wearable AI. We predicted the future. I'm Marty McFly. All right. We're going to go to break and we'll be right back.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
All All right. So since we predicted the future, Lee, we talked about, Robin Williams and his voice being cloned and his daughter, making some comments about it. We talked about how AI is being used, in Hollywood and related to voice prints and everything that's there. Everything, the some things positive, some things, quite scary and negative, but you actually sent me a story, right? Because we're, I send you stories, you sent me stories about the mayor of New York related to using AI and actually in a positive way. So maybe you can share a little bit about that story.
Well, this is like super fresh off the press too. This is coming from Politico. There was an article that was written about Mayor Eric Adams from New York. And the initial question is, Mayor Eric Adams doesn't speak Spanish, or does he? ? So Mayor Adams has been leveraging AI for his political robocalls so that he can put his message into Mandarin or Spanish or other like major languages that are used inside of the districts that he's targeting for his political calls that every politician does and has to do. It's really quite interesting to see it kind of come from the direction that we had talked about last week, where we were looking at all of the negative. And I said, well, what if that meant that doing, like I said, we were talking about books. I think we're talking about audiobooks, but you could do audiobooks. Localization on those audiobooks in different languages and still have the same speaker, or localization for movies. Cause we were talking about Robin Williams being the genie. And then all of a sudden the Spanish dub would no longer be a dub. It would be Robin Williams doing the genie character in Spanish, because it would be an AI of his voice. And this is exactly what Mayor Adams is doing in New York. And I find it so interesting. There's a quote in this article where he says, people are stopping me on the street all the time and saying, I didn't know you spoke Mandarin.
I can imagine getting a call like, hola, soy el alcalde Eric Adams. And you're like, what? That would be really interesting. Or getting it in Hindi or whatever language, right? Or Portuguese.
It's very interesting. And of course it would first really take root in politics. But I can see the value of that. It does help people get a message to people who typically would miss out on a lot of that messaging or conversation. Hopefully it could also help increase voter participation and encourage voter participation, things like that. And I think that it's fantastic. It's very interesting to see this roll out. And by and large, it seems to be positive. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so don't be surprised if you get a call for your local state officials asking you to vote for them or something in whichever language you prefer to speak at home. So that'll be quite interesting. All right, so we are going to talk about AI, not so much from the politics side, but more on the wearable side. So obviously we talked about Project Primrose, this dress at Adobe Sneaks, during Adobe Max. There's also like this moment, right? What I'm calling like the race towards these new wearables, this post-smartphone future. And Humane obviously made news. Humane's a startup out of Silicon Valley, created by two amazing former Apple executives who left to create the future wearable, whatever replaces in their perspective the mobile phone. And they've said that the future is not on our faces. They don't think that the Apple Vision Pro is kind of the future. They are looking more at an AI wearable. In this case, it's called the AI Pin from Humane. It made its debut on the runway during Fashion Month. And, had like Naomi Campbell, a famous supermodel, wearing it, and several other models wearing it during the Capernaum Fashion Show. A lot of talk about it. I don't think they demoed it. They just wore it, right, as a wearable. But there's this moment, right, where we're talking about wearable AI. So not so much the dress, but more of like a device, whether it's something that we pin to our clothes or eventually, the glasses. There's talks about OpenAI, talking to Johnny Ive about creating an AI wearable. There's also the Rewind pendant. It's a little pendant that uses AI and sticks on your clothes, and you wear it all day and it records everything. So Lee, what do you think about the Rewind pendant, and also like your views on wearable AI? Because it's about to get heated. Like, I feel like we're heading into this like clash of visions of what is that future spatial computing device you know, slash AI wearable that we might wear?
Oh gosh, I don't know. This comes up over and over and over again. And I would actually, if someone like a client were to call me and ask me that question, do you know what my answer would be?
What would you say?
Okay, I'm going to give you the number to Kathy Hackle. You need to call her and have this conversation because I know nothing about wearable AI fashion.
Great answer, because I spend a ridiculous amount of time thinking about AI wearables or spatial computing wearables as well. And yeah, I even have like our producer, Lily and I, we did not plan this, but Lily and I actually wrote A Wearable World, which is like a little mini book. It's a free resource for anyone that was interested in reading about, you know, the future of spatial computing and AI wearables. So yeah, thanks for that. But how do you feel about a device that you would wear every day that records everything you say, that you can turn to and say, hey, what did my wife ask me to do? Or, you know, what did I say during this phone call?
You know, I would love to be that dystopian, hating, this is the introduction to cyberpunk, you know, negative guy in the room. But the truth is, I feel like we're past it. It's just taking a different form factor, because the fact of the matter is I always have my cell phone on me. It's always sitting on a desk.
Yeah.
And you can tell me it's not like listening to what I'm saying, but when I start seeing those Amazon ads pop up, like we all know, something's fishy. On paper, it looks so intrusive, but in actual practicality, I don't know. I'm not completely against it. As long as you know what's going on, I think it's fair. I think it's when you don't know what's going on, when it comes out, you know, 2 years later of like what you accidentally participated in. So it's going to be about transparency at the end of the day. I think it's going to usher in a big debate for new laws, but we'll see how that goes.
I think we should have a whole episode on the future, post-smartphone future, like what these wearables become. You know, I obviously, like I mentioned, I spent a lot of time thinking about them, also from the fashion sense, because there's obviously people are like, we'll never wear these. I'm like, oh, you just wait.
Yeah.
You just wait.
I mean, there's a reason why Ray-Ban is working with Meta. I was having this conversation yesterday with someone who worked on Google Glass, actually. And they were lamenting that, you know, Google Glass did it first. And I was like, yeah, of course they did, but they didn't do it with Ray-Ban, and the Google Glass made you look ridiculous. And that's the technology, which was far above its time. I mean, that was 2013, was super impressive, and it was expensive, and it kind of made you externally look weird. And that was the thing that I always pointed out. And I said, until they put it in some fashionable glasses, this isn't going to fly. And I know so many people who have bought the Ray-Bans from Meta after this launch, because they're Ray-Bans and they're about the price of a pair of Ray-Bans with all of the extra goodies and features. Not quite to the full like blown AI, but we're one step away from that, right?
We're one step away from that Ray-Ban moment. I've called it the Ray-Ban moment for a long time. And I do have to say something about the Google Glass, because it always stunned me, like the marketing pictures where all these white guys wearing them. I'm like, oh my gosh, like no. And I feel like with the Ray-Bans, it's not only Ray-Ban, it's Luxottica, right? Which is a giant fashion, you know, conglomerate. So there's going to be a lot of other things that are going to come out, not just Ray-Bans, right? So I think there is going to be this kind of wearable AI, wearable, you know, device moment that we're going to go through.
So from a futurist perspective, what do you think is, because I don't have an answer here, what do you think is the prime form factor in a wearable? Is it a watch? Is it a pendant? Is it glasses? Because not everyone wears glasses. You don't want to wear glasses inside. If you don't wear glasses, right, and they're sunglasses, you don't wear them inside, you know what I mean? Unless you're like cool. So what's the right form factor here?
The answer to that is like, no one really knows, right? Even if you're a futurist, you're not saying this is going to happen. You're saying these are the potential things that can happen. I have a feeling that the consumer is eventually going to decide, right? So, you know, many people in Silicon Valley, and I was there last week, believe that it is, you know, a device that goes on your face, right? For many different reasons, right? Because it's able to see the world, and you see all this context through your eyes, and everything. But it could be something completely different, right? It could be something like what Humane's proposing, or it might be a combination. At the end of the day, I feel like a lot of these devices, whether it is, you know, a pin or whether it's glasses, like eventually it'll all kind of coincide into one device, but we still need to look at, you know, how things develop, you know, everything from supply chain and optics and battery and all these sorts of things. So like my money is not on a specific type of wearable. I do think it's a wearable. It's something that we're going to wear on ourselves. That's what the signals are pointing towards.
Did you see any episodes of the TV show Upload on Amazon? It's a comedy.
Yes, I did. I was actually an advisor, and I did a whole Ask a Futurist series with them. So know it very well.
So there are moments of that show that I think are prolific, and then there are moments of that show that I think are absolutely insane. But the thing that I really liked, and this is such a weird detail, is that their wearable is just a ring. And that ring holds all of your data. It's basically a thumb drive, but it also pulls biometrics. And as I thought more about it, that seemed to make the most sense to me as I watched that show. It'll be interesting if we ever can get to something of that small of a form factor, though, or if that is truly science fiction.
We'll have to see. I mean, there's already the Aura Ring that I think a lot of people use, but obviously it's not that advanced. And we still have to see, right? Once we get multimodal on like the Ray-Ban Meta glasses, I don't know. We're about to go into a really interesting period, but we should have a whole episode, I think, about that. And you mentioned my futurist opinion. I want to mention before we go into our expert interview, a post that I saw this week on LinkedIn from Amy Webb. So many people listening to this probably know Amy Webb. She is an amazing futurist. She's the CEO of the Future Today Institute. I think she's in Sydney right now at South by Southwest Sydney, the launch of that event. She does an amazing, you know, trends report every year. It's not sold out, right? But it's like a packed South by Southwest session every year. But she wrote something on LinkedIn. I'm going to read this to you because it really spoke to me and I think it's important to mention here. She said, "For those of you who are editors or who work on the copy desk, futurist is not a made-up job title. The copy desk should not add self-titled or so-called before futurist. There is no need to put futurist in quotes." And futurist is in quotes in her post. "If you change the job title of futurist to something else, just as technology forecaster or technology commentator, that materially misrepresents what we do, just as changing journalist to stenographer or thought influencer materially misinterprets what you do." And then she talks about how, you know, this is a field which is called strategic foresight, which many of us are trained in. I was able to train at the University of Houston. You know, she herself studied game. As many of us anchor our work in quantitative modeling. In my case, I spent 4 years in college studying economics and game theory. She's done amazing work. She's really a quantitative futurist. Like, I describe myself more as a tech futurist. But it says here also, our job isn't only giving keynote speeches, though we sometimes, she said, our job isn't giving keynote speeches, though we sometimes speak in order to share our research publicly. Most of our work is sitting at desks, meticulously researching, modeling, and running simulations. It would be fantastic if you'd all use the correct title when citing or quoting us. Many thanks. So I have to echo what Amy said. I think this was a very powerful post. I've had that happen to a million times where it's like so-called this or like self-titled. And I'm like, that's happened to me many times, right? Think it's important for people to listening to this, understand that there is a discipline. It's called strategic foresight. There are PhDs. There are master's programs. University of Houston has been teaching this for a long time. There's professional associations like the Association of Professional Futurists. There's the Global Futures, program as well. So I want people to understand that, like, this is not a made up title. Like, a lot of us train in many different ways on futurism, in strategic foresight. But yeah, like, that really spoke to me.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that comes from, well, can I be honest?
Be honest.
I think a lot of it comes from like LinkedIn, when people just aren't sure what to put in their bios. And I see those terms and others misused, right? Like code ninja, like, oh my God, please. I never want to see that again. You know, but it was one of those things where everyone was putting this title in. It's like, no, there are legitimately people who have studied this. This is a very real title. And it was, I feel like it was originally coined from, and this is me just currently scraping the back of my own brain here. I feel like the first I'd heard of this was through Ray Kurzweil. And that was when I first came across the term. And I would dare anyone to call Ray Kurzweil a self-titled futurist to his own face. I just don't think that's going to go very well for you if you do that. Yeah, you know, like there are people who study this and go through the predictive analytics of figuring out what comes next by logic. Mm-hmm. And it deserves an incredible amount of respect. It is also one of those reasons why I don't use futurist in my in my work title. That's not actually what I do. Yeah. I will help and can be a part of analytics, and I'll do, you know, session predictions on areas that I'm an expert in, but I don't use that term.
I feel like it's so misunderstood, right? It's like such a misunderstood kind of career path. And you know, I'm all for people using the word futurist. I think when the media uses it and like says like, puts it in quotes or like doesn't acknowledge that it's an actual career, like it makes me upset, just like Amy. And I have to mention, like, Amy to me, Amy Webb is kind of like my North Star futurist. I think she's an amazing, brilliant thinker. She's very, very, you know, she works with these methods. She's, like she said, she's a quantitative futurist. So she does a lot of this modeling and everything. I describe myself more as a tech futurist. I'm a, you know, not so much in the modeling, but I am thinking through, you know, simulations, but on a different, in a different way and scenario totally. Planning. So, yeah, so I love that. So I do want to kind of head into, you know, into our next break. And when we get back from that, we're going to have an interview with Faith Popcorn, who is one of the original futurists. Like, she's an icon. She has been, she has been doing strategic foresight and futures for a very, very long time, working with many different brands. You'll hear that in the interview. She's got some really interesting perspectives. You know, one of the things that I'm going to ask her about this is she was mentioned by name during one of the episodes in Succession.
Oh, wow.
I know. So a pop culture icon, but she has been doing, you know, she has been a futurist for a very long time, and she's become a good friend of mine, a brilliant, brilliant person. So we're going to go to break. And when we get back, you're going to hear the interview with Faith, and then we'll come back. Lee, you and I will wrap up with a concept that you and I have been thinking about for a future episode. So let's go to break and we'll hear from Faith right after that. So now I'm joined by someone that I've admired for a very long time, someone that's become a good dear friend of mine, the amazing, I mean, you pretty much do not need an introduction, but the amazing Faith Popcorn is here with us. Faith, thanks for joining Tech Magic.
Nice to see you, Kathy.
Nice to see you too. I love chatting with you. I always have a great time.
Me too. I love it.
Yeah. And most people know who you are, of course, but, you know, there might be some people tuning into the podcast that, you know, mm-hmm. don't know who you are or first time they come across. Can you tell folks a little bit about who you are, sure. and what you've done and why you're such an icon?
Oh, well, I'm a futurist, which really means a Sherpa for change. And I've had Faith Popcorn's Brain Reserve for almost 5 decades now. And we have worked for most of the Fortune 200. And what we do for them is help them see ahead so they don't walk into the potholes of the future. That's a simple explanation. So we'll say, you know, this is going to be outlawed, you know, like sugar, or this is where artificial intelligence is going to play, and this is where you're not prepared and where you have to change your strategy, invent a new product, a new brand, just change your direction to be in the winds of the future.
Yeah. And there's an example you always use about telling one of your clients about bottled water before it was a thing. Can you tell a little bit about that story? Sure. Because I think it's fantastic.
And that's getting even more. It's so interesting how it, you know, can spin. But we went to Pepsi and Coca-Cola very early in the 80s. And we said the water sources are drying up. Water is going to be the next big commodity. And you need to bottle water. And they said, well, first of all, Coke said, well, then they people would know there's water in Coke, that kind of CEO logic. And Pepsi wasn't ready. And I don't think they caught up for about 8 years. And then, you know what happened is billions and billions of dollars. Same way when we went to Nike and said, you don't have a women's division. And now I think that's about $9 billion. We helped create that. We went to Kodak and said, or they came to us, you know, film is over, really. It's going to be digital. And they said, but we wanted to make film. And how do we make film? And how do we get people to buy film? So it's just like people saying now, do I have to think about artificial intelligence? I mean, I don't think I want to think about that. No, I'm not going to think about that. It's just like I was doing a big talk up in the in the Cotswolds, to the big, enormous media company. And they're still talking about the screen, which we know will disappear. It's going to be in the air. It's going to be in your brain. So that's what I mean. Getting big Titanics. You know, the Titanic would have missed the iceberg by 8 degrees. That's all. Just a little bit. Yeah.
A little bit. Well, you talked about AI and how, you know, incredibly important it is to actually take it seriously. Everyone's talking about it, right? Everyone's talking about it. The reality is we're in a bit of a nascent period. I mean, AI has been worked on for a long time, but it's still early days, let's say. What are some of the roles that you think AI is going to play in the future that no one is thinking about?
Well, here's the first thing no one is thinking about. There are four oligarchs. Andreessen, Thiel, Zuckerberg, and Musk. And they are defining your future, yours, everybody's, and telling you how you're going to exist in the future. So one is interested in virtual worlds. Musk wants to go to Mars, and he did Neuralink, which is a very disturbing piece of the future. Actually, we could talk about that. Thiel, Web3, human enhancement, life extension to 100. So, you know, that's a bit scary. So your question was...
Yeah, what are some of the roles that you think AI will play in the future that no one is thinking about?
AI will be able to do far more than it's doing right now. It's going to be able to make a product, market a product, actually manufacture it, and distribute it, and measure it, the success or not. I mean, it's going to be a better spouse than you ever had in your life. It's going to be your best dog that can talk to you. It's going to be your house that's totally responsive to you. Yes. And people just are saying like, oh, I don't know. You know, I don't. And you know, the common thing with business now is when you tell this to heads of companies, they go, you know, I'll be retired by then. I'll be out of here. So nobody's paying attention to it.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm, yeah. And that's interesting because I actually wrote something in Forbes back in 2020 called Marketing to Robots, or the concept of business to robot to consumer. Like, we're going to have to go through that bot. And it reminded me of what you just said. So,
yeah, that's instead of B2B, it's B2R.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, business to robot to consumer. So,
a great insight, actually.
Yeah.
As usual, Kathy.
I'll send you the link to the article. It's actually
okay, good.
Really good. You mentioned Neuralink, right? There's been articles about some of the things that have been happening at Neuralink. You know, what do you think it's going to take culturally for people to adopt Neuralink-esque technology? And by Neuralink, we mean that, you know, brain computer interface implant that actually goes inside the brain. There's others that go that are external. But what do you think it's going to take? I mean, it's pretty, I don't know.
Whew. One, let's talk about how horrible the situation was for all the monkeys in the lab. It was so inhuman. They died horrible deaths in this experimentation. And it could have, and I talked to a lot of veterinarians, it could have been a lot easier on them. So that was very bad. He didn't do that well. Terrible. And then, because bad deeds maybe get rewarded, he just got FDA approval to implant Neuralink in human trials. And a lot of people don't realize this. And then they go, what? This is what's happening. He's saying that it's going to cure blindness, spinal, you know, problems, everything internal. I'm saying that he's going to read your mind and he's going to know what your thinking is and be able to influence it. And a woman named Nita Farahani wrote a wonderful book, Battle for Your Brain. I had her on my podcast, Jolty. And she said, it's the last bastion of privacy and intimacy is your brain. And he's in there. So that's what I think about Neuralink.
That's really interesting you bring up her book, because I read it and it's really interesting. She talks about, I think it was cognitive rights, about cognitive rights and who has the right to influence, you know, what you're thinking or what's happening to your brain. And that's been, you know, I think just a very valuable, it's a great book, right?
It got great reviews. You know, I don't think it was a popular book, but it's very simply written. And she is the warning bell of, you know, what's coming. Once your brain is invaded, people are going to be able to put advertising messages into your brain. I just saw a movie like that at the Hampton Film Festival, International Film Festival. Already, the creatives are a very good way to foresee what's going to happen, you know, and that's what's happening. So it's not too good.
No, it's pretty scary. I will tell you this. So I've demoed a lot of the external brain computer interface devices, the ones that are, you know, I do not want to get something implanted. And there's an observation whenever I've used those is that my brain actually really likes using them. And
how do you know?
I can feel that light, like even just thinking about it, something lights up. Like it's like a brain, it's like a workout for your brain, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a good thing, right? Because it could lead to addiction. It could lead to like something like I need to be plugged into the system or something. So that's always stayed with me. Like, why does my brain like it so much? And is this a good thing or a bad thing? So yeah, I think once we go into like brain computer interfaces, especially implants, I think we're getting into territory that can turn very negative very quickly.
And the idea that there's going to be a screen, I mean, Elon's talking about the interface between brain and computer. No, you don't need a screen. You just go, I want to see Kathy. Think it. And it's there. So it is. It's scary. And the train's left the station. You know, they say, oh, I love humans. They're so adorable. They say, oh, they'll still need humans to fix these things. No, they won't. They're already fixing each other. And they're already increasing their intelligence by talking to each other. And, you know, humans will be dispensable for sure, unless they're uploaded with chips. Like, I need 40 points on my IQ kind of thing. And we've been talking about that since the Popcorn Report, 1990, chipping.
That's actually my other question is like the idea of uploading, it's not chipping, but it's further, right? But the idea of uploading your consciousness, right? It was featured in Black Mirror. There's a whole Amazon Prime series called Upload. You know, there's also the song from Grimes, I Want to Be Software.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on ever this being a possibility one day?
For sure. It's the end of death. I mean, I think Grimes, or now she calls herself C, italicized. That's her name. And it means speed of light. And, you know, she's suing Elon for parental rights right now. So anyway, I think she's a great futurist. And you're going to, as you decide to leave life, you know, maybe your body catches up with you, your bad habits, you're going to be uploaded to a computer. This is very, you know, troublesome for kids that think they're going to inherit a lot of money, because there will be the brain managing everything in that really annoying way, just talking from my kid's point of view. And it's not going to be the classic hand-me-down, you know, everything, because you're going to still be there. And you're going to be learning. And you're going to be up to date. So that's about uploading consciousness.
That's so interesting. So what we're talking about is like potential things that are going to, you know, happen or, you know, are already starting to happen. But in this world, right, it's increasingly starting to get shaped by AI and obviously other technologies. What becomes real? Like what is real when we head into this future?
It's mushy. I mean, you see kids, watch kids, and I know you do. I know you study children too, how they go back and forth so fluidly. They're, you know, I'll ask my kid a question, I talked to so-and-so. They don't mean they talked to her. They mean they texted her or him. So it's like this. They can go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, but there's a lot of preference to living in the world of, and I know you're an expert on this, metaverse, gaming. It's a nicer world. And as this world becomes more contradictory, more difficult, more haves and have-nots, more unfair, more everything, and we go on like a kind of new social income where our jobs are eliminated and we get paid by the government, let's say, you're going to want to spend a lot more time in a prettier place. Not in real life.
Mm-hmm. Not in the physical world, right? Because it's...
No.
Yeah, like I'm still hopeful. I think maybe I need to remain hopeful in some ways that we're going to solve climate change and some of the issues. But, you know, it's pretty scary when I think about it long term.
We might solve it by going to Mars. I mean, that's, mm-hmm. you know, you trash this planet. There aren't going to be any big fish. The water is like the big plastic islands in the ocean. None of the people that make the plastic want to take responsibility for them and clean them up. They could be cleaned up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're so lazy. We just go somewhere else. It's like what they did to Staten Island around here. You know, they made a garbage dump, but the other couple of boroughs are okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what do you think about that? Because that's an interesting point. There, I do hear a lot of people, especially in Silicon Valley. I was just there talking about AI almost as a savior, right? Everything is going to get better because of AI. We're going to cure cancer. We're going to live longer. We're going to solve climate change, and I need to remain hopeful. But sometimes I'm like, how much of this is really going to happen? And how much is it just people trying to push AI as a technology? What are your thoughts? Is the truth in the middle? Like, what do you think?
I think it's calming the masses. And I think that people that will be able to afford the uploads to make themselves smarter or stronger, you know, like these, you know, like these things that factory workers are starting, exoskeletons that to wear to be stronger. It's going to be on the inside, you know, making us stronger mentally, physically, making us more beautiful, whatever it is we want. But that's the haves. Still going to be, you know, I mean, I said one hopeful thing, which is rarity for me, but I said there'll be scholar chips for the have-nots. We'll give out, you know, some chips, but it's and everybody says whatever's wrong, science will fix that. You know, I mean, we're about to blow our world up right this second with, you know, what's happening in the Middle East, what's happening in the Ukraine, what's happening in Taiwan and China and Russia. You know, it's not cool.
No, it's in all your time as a futurist, like, is this one of those times that you think there's an inflection point?
When we'll look back and go, oh, remember when the Middle East had different countries, but now it's just one big rubble? That, maybe. It seems that less and less the beauty of being human is fading, because we're all little scientists, right? And we're just like so fascinated with all this, you know, computers and gaming and the beauty of spending time or meditating, or getting your act together a little bit, or compassion, or kindness, or all this stuff. I see it fading. I think this could be the era where it faded.
And when it fades, does what replaces it? I remember listening to you a couple of years ago, probably during the pandemic, and you were doing a talk, and you talked about anger. It was before things got really heated. And it was interesting to hear your perception on that. And I could sense it too. I was like, something's going to give. Like, there was something brewing. You could feel it. And you said it's going to lead into anger. So do you think that is this type of anger that we're living through, like, I don't know, like, is it going to continue?
Well, I mentioned to you, you know, everybody thought I had this newsletter called The Popcorn Report. I didn't, so I thought I better do it. I mean, for years, I read The Pop, it's so great. I go, I don't have one. I don't have a bulletin. But anyway, I'm on issue 2, and this issue that's dropping next week is on paranoia. And this happens right, I think, before explosive anger. And we're starting to think, what are the pharma companies up to? Why don't they let natural stuff in? What are the food companies into? Why are they making stuff that's so unhealthy for us? What happens? This is kind of fascinating. So, you know, those also for the haves, Manjaro mm-hmm. and Ozempic and Wegovy. So you take a little shot. And if you don't have insurance, it's quite expensive. And you don't want to eat and you get thin. And if you notice, Oprah's thin. Everybody got thin. If you looked at the last Academy Awards, everybody says thin. That is what? Okay. Now, as that becomes more available to people, example, this is how we go down that road of the future, far future, everybody can get it because it becomes a pill and insurance does cover it because obesity leads to so many hospital bills, right? Okay, well, this is what I'm writing to clients about. What happens to the snack food business? What happens to the alcohol? They're looking at it maybe as a cure for alcoholism. What happens to the alcohol business? I mean, you know, as a drinker, and I'm an excellent drinker, but then I like have a, like one martini dirty with olives, if you ever need to know. And I don't have another one. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that's what I mean. What our company does, looking ahead, mm-hmm. taking it down the road and saying, how do we prepare for this? So I think we always think science is going to save us. Science is going to save us. I don't think so. And I see this robotic future getting bigger and bigger. Artificial intelligence. I say take the artificial away and stop fooling yourself. It's intelligence. Mm-hmm. And it's getting bigger and bigger. So
I do want to ask you one last question before I ask you where folks can contact you. But I think a lot of people listening to this podcast were probably fans of the show Succession. And there was a part where I was literally watching it and Kendall says something like, we've asked, so, you know, Harari, we asked Popcorn. They had this idea and this concept that they wanted to, and they mentioned you by name. And I was just like, oh my gosh, she's such an icon. How did that feel? Like, did you know that was going to happen? Was it a surprise?
No, I didn't. I was watching it like just like you and go, oh, wow, that's cool. I guess we're in the culture. That's when you become culture food, zeitgeist of the culture. And I was like really happy with that. I thought that is very cool. And I do love Succession. I'm so sorry. I hope they continue. It is so delicious.
Yeah, it's so sad it ended. I think we all kind of mourned a lot of things in that last season. But yeah, Faith, where can people find you? How can they get access to the Popcorn Report? Like, and I know you also have a fantastic podcast that I've been a guest on. Yes. Tell everyone where they can connect with you.
Oh, let's see. Fpopcorn at faithpopcorn.com is the most direct. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook, of course. I'm on everything. What are the other ones? Insta, all of them.
X. Now it's called the X. I'm not using X much, so I don't know.
No, not that much. And sometimes I say, beam me up. So if you're thinking about something, or I answer every single question, and then, you know, come on to Jolty and listen to Jolty, and that's on Apple, all of them, Spotify. I think I'm pretty available futurist because I love answering questions and I love teaching futurism. I'm developing a course for futurism, and I'm updating the Popcorn Report, which is coming out soon, and I'm working with a friend of mine, Sarah DeVanzo, on how you teach futurism. So you don't teach futurism. Everybody is a futurist. They have it inside of them. You teach people how to apply it, expose it, pay attention to it. But we are all futurists, and we should really be, more focused on that. So just fpopcorn and faithpopcorn.com, and I will answer you personally.
Well, Faith, thank you for being on Tech Magic.
Pleasure. Thanks, Kathy.
All right. So that was a really interesting interview with Faith Popcorn. She's a brilliant icon and thinker. All right, Lee. So let's talk a little bit about, now that we're wrapping up this episode, let's talk a little bit about the idea you and I have been talking about. You and I talked during our first episode about Prince. And mm-hmm. how he was like a technology visionary. I mean, amazing artist, of course. That's what most people think about when they think of Prince. They think about his, creativity and music and everything. But he was also like technologically really advanced and as a futurist in some ways, like in reality, not trained in strategic foresight, but thinking through the future of music and entertainment. And you and I were talking about maybe doing a whole episode dedicated to Prince. So
just one big purple episode. I think that would be fantastic. We know a couple of people who've worked kind of in the field. I've come across a couple of people who have had the opportunity to, in their careers, work with Prince. And by all accounts, just a completely off the chart visionary when it comes to where technology was going, but I am by no means an expert in it. So we know a couple of people that could make a good episode, and we could deep dive and ask some questions. I've heard some Prince lore, some very interesting Prince lore that I want to ask some experts about. And one of them has something to do with Oregon, and that's as far as I'm going to say.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's very
strange. I think I know what you're talking about, but we'll get into it in a future episode when we do our Prince episode, our purple episode. But yeah, for me, he's like a gaming visionary. Like, he was doing gaming before it was like...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Crazy.
He was kind of doing a Myst-style game right around the same time that like Myst was coming out, which that was such a big hit. I think it might have actually preceded it, though. But I'm not the right person to ask.
Let's not spill the tea. Let's actually have our Prince experts join us for that in a future episode. So keep your eyes out for that. Lee, thanks for joining me for episode 2.
Anytime.
I hope people will like this. We're already getting feedback, by the way. We're getting feedback. There's an email that you can send an email to Adweek. You can also email podcast@kathyhackle.com, H-A-C-K-L. You can reach out to us on social. I know several people have sent me messages saying, I want to hear about this, or I love the episode. I love you guys talking about tech and technology, gaming, kind of bringing it all together. So Lee, thanks for joining me for the second episode.
Thank you.
Awesome. So we'll be back next week. And we want to thank everyone for joining Tech Magic. And please subscribe, leave us a review. We're really, really excited that this show is taking off in the way it is. And yeah, we'll see you next week for some Tech Magic.
Hey there, are you ready to elevate your personal brand or company? Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for video content and audience building. Imagine growing your brand organically on social media without the hassle of editing videos for hours. With Viral Growth, it's a breeze. They handle the brainstorming, scripting, and editing while you simply just hit record. And don't worry about your niche. They cater to everyone, from business and marketing to health and wellness. Are you ready to make waves in the social media realm? Visit viralgrowth.io and use code ADWEEK, that's ADWEEK, all lowercase, and get 10% off your plan.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.